Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I think we are having slight difficulties. I know my guests in the chat room, so just bear with me here. I'm having
some slight difficulties.
Yeah, I just noticed that, but I'm having a bit of technical difficulties. And if the listeners would just bear with us, we will be on momentarily. Technology has a mind of its own.
Some friends you gain, some you lose. In the back of your mind, you're looking for love, but found the blues. That's why I've come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I wanna be more than just somebody. I wanna be more than just a friend. I want to be more than someone special, 'cause special friends sometimes they won't understand.
Well, happy Sunday to each and every one, and I would just love to take this pleasure to welcome my honored guest who has been in the chat, in the virtual green room, hanging out to wait on us to get all these little technical glitches resolved. So we are going to be progressing momentarily, but I just want to thank each and every one of you who chose to join this conversation with my honored guest and myself. Before I bring my guest on live, I just want to do some housekeeping. For those of you in the chat room, I'll be over to acknowledge you in a moment. I want to just tell you how excited and blessed I am this Sunday. I've just been blessed with the opportunity to begin to do a weekly column in an online newspaper, to do what I am so passionate about, to do a column every week in personal development and empowerment. My column will be called Empower, Reinvent, and Transform. And for those of you who have been following me for a while, you know how passionate I am about those three aspects of everyone's life. So I look forward to doing that every Wednesday, and I will keep you informed as to when that is going to start. I also am doing the final edit on three of my book. For those of you who've been listening, knew that I have compiled four books with all my quotes that has helped me on my journey of reinvention, empowerment, and transformation. So I've put some time aside, and I have put those together so they can help you too on your journey. So they will be up on Amazon soon. Before the end of February, we should have them up there. For those of you who purchased them from my website, DaphneClarkHudsonEmpowers.com, you will receive autographed copies of those books, okay? So I'm very excited. I feel super, super, super blessed for all the amazing things that's happening in my life. This Wednesday morning, I have an amazing gentleman coming on to talk about some of the growing trend in building your small business. So mark your calendar to be with us on Wednesday morning, 10 a.m. to noon time, right here and Blog Talk Radio. Well, I think my honored guest is well known to many, and maybe there are some people who is not really sure who Mr. John T. Mills is. So before I bring him on live, let me tell you something about this amazing gentleman. John T. Mills, Mr. Mills has earned a master's and a bachelor's degree in business administration. He's been a professor at Sir John Douglas College, HBC, past board member of the Bowie State University Foundation, president of J.T. Wills Consulting, past vice president of the Maryland and D.C. Minority Supplier Development Council, producer of the John T. Mills Book Tree radio show, author of Just a Season and Legacy, A New Season, a journalist by the way of the Washington Examiner, and a blogging supporter of several community organizations, a volunteer, a strong advocate for literacy, empowerment, and a friend to many. Ladies and gentlemen, I take this opportunity to introduce to some and to present to others, Mr. John T. Wills. Mr. Wills, how are you?
Good evening. Let me say thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure. It's a pleasure because I know how busy you are. And for you to take time out on a Sunday evening to be with us and to invest in my listeners, I see that as an honor and a privilege. I know that the brief bio I just read about you have not even scratched the surface of who you are. Would you kindly take a few moments to just tell the listeners a little more in depth about who you are and what you want them to know about this amazing journey that you have been on?
Well, that's a very easy question. I prefer to be called just a man. It doesn't get any heavier than that. The worldly titles that we are all given are really testaments to the time in which we've traveled. It doesn't necessarily make the person. You are those things, you have accomplished things, but I believe in service, and service, in my opinion, is not adequately defined in Webster's Dictionary, and that means to be a benefit to others.
Based on some things I have read, you are originally from the Washington, D.C. area. So you have committed quite a great portion of your life has been committed and devoted and dedicated to that community. Is that accurate?
Yes.
You know, many people with your caliber has gone on to various places, and you know, a lot of times you hear people say, well, oh, the grass is greener someplace. And why have you decided the grass there in D.C., Maryland, is very green, and you want to remain there to maintain the integrity and the legacy of your community? Why is it of vital importance to you, Mr. Wills?
Well, I've lived, I can say that I have lived. I have had a life that some might compare to a fairy tale. I've been a person to go after and achieve whatever it was that I set out to do. I've been blessed, and I want to give to others. I have shaken the hand of a couple of presidents. I've known senators and politicians of all sorts, entertainers, sports stars, and done all of these things. And when that moment is over, when time has passed, it's a memory. People are very fleeting. Right now, I enjoy a great deal of popularity. I've lived a very public life. I prefer to live a life that is not as exposed, if you will, because they shoot leaders. One of the highlights of my life, I had the opportunity to have dinner with the Mandelas, and Winnie Mandela said something to me at the table. She said that she had endured adversity that most people could not have endured. They put her husband in jail for 27 years, they put her in jail, they put her house, killed her son, rattle off about 10 things. And she took a deep breath and she looked at me and she said, I will continue to fight for my people. So kind of commitment and dedication is, they don't make very many people like that, and I admire her greatly. From that, I took something that was very important. I lost my ego, so I don't have one. It's not about me. It is about the legacy that you leave.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. Because, ego is one of the things that get us all derailed, because a lot of pretend to put the ego up, you know, in front of everything, and that messes each journey and the progress up. So that was quite well said. I oftentimes in brief conversation with different types of people, I said there is one thing in life that we don't have a say in. Literally, we don't have a say in who attend our funeral verbally, because we don't sit on and create a list and say, well, here is who we are going to invite to our funeral. Neither do we, although I have been told by many when I raised this kind of conversation that there are people who've prepared their eulogy and left it to be read. However, my strength in a conversation of that sort is that the people who comes out to our funeral are the people who are attached or is connected in some way to the legacies that we have created. And most of those people have a passion and a desire to carry on that legacy. And I said, the life that I live is the life that will create the eulogy that everyone hears when I'm gone home. Now, I pose that question to you. Let's say you would be sitting in a chair and listening to your eulogy and just viewing the gathering when you go home. What do you think that gathering would look like, and what would your eulogy sound like?
Knowing me, I'd probably get up and give my own eulogy. But I'm...
I forbid you for getting up. You better sit and just observe and listen.
But to that point, and I'm glad you posed the question that way, I had one son, and he was killed in a tragic automobile accident. And prior to that event, as I said, I was a very public person, and I thought I was the man. After I watched him pass and to go through the next 3 or 4 days with the funeral home and the medical examiner and autopsy, all of these things that are horrible in and of itself, I became a man. So we don't know what is held for us. I spoke and gave his eulogy because I knew that I could do a better job than anyone else. And for my eulogy, I would simply ask that I be judged by the work I've done. Now, I will go on and add to that, after that event, that experience, grieving is a hard thing to do. You know, we go to church and, you know, they shout and pass the plate and choir sings. But I learned at that moment I was not really prepared to deal with his loss and the loss of someone so very dear to me and the person that I loved more than life itself. So my way of grieving and having the responsibility of caring everyone during this period, I neglected to grieve, didn't know how to. So after having been a professor, I knew that writing is therapeutic. And I would lock myself away, and I would just write. And I was posting or journalizing my feelings. Mm-hmm. And after about 500 pages, an event happened that told me I had just written an epic novel, which is titled Just the Season. And I chose the title Just the Season because that's all God gave us. In the final analysis, you know, we didn't come here to stay, so you have to understand that one day you're going to leave. Now, in this novel, the character, the main character, visits his son at a cemetery, and he looks at the tombstone as he stands there and grieves, and he realizes that he sees the child's name, he sees a beginning date, he sees a dash and an end date, and it comes to him as an epiphany that the whole life of a person is concealed within that tiny little dash. So he asks himself to, if someone were to tell the story concealed in within his dash, what would they say? That's kind of like the eulogy. So at that moment, I go into the story, and I relive or re-examine the character's life in its entirety. And at the end of the story, as if in the blink of an eye, come back to that moment. So it is a very unique story. But what has captured people's attention and made it so interesting to most is that I used the character's life as a storyline, and through his eyes, I tell the story of the history of a people. I am an expert in the African American diaspora, so I know our story.
I don't want you to go there yet, because that's part of the conversation that we're going to be doing later. But I tell you, we are so connected, because I asked that eulogy question because I was going to lead into the book, Just a Season, and why. Why you chose that topic. We are in sync. We are connected. But I want to just linger a bit more, if it's okay with you, on the book, Just a Season. I love what you say about a beginning and an end, because a lot of people really don't take the time to understand that that dash is the legacy. It's your life. So what is our dash? Our dash is our why we are here. And, you know, when the end time comes, we can't play catch up. We can't make up that dash. That dash has already been established. So we have no control over what the dash is going to be saying. And you're right, because that's the eulogy. So you got a rude awakening. And as I listen to you say what you said about the loss of your son and what has evolved out of that, I'm glad you mentioned journal, because I am such an advocate for journal. And a lot of times when I mention journaling to men, they just cringe and they are, oh, that's a girly stuff. So thanks, Professor, for mentioning it on Global Radio that you journaled. And I hope the brothers will know now that it's no longer a girly thing. But as you begin to work on Just a Season, what are some of the other aha moments that evolved out of it?
Humblements?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were a lot of people who contributed to my life. Your success or anyone's success isn't something that occurs in an instant. It is built over time, and there are many contributors to it. What I did and specifically wanted to do, and wink, wink, I won't say this, but this is my eulogy. This is the story that I have lived, and I saw this through my eyes, and I mm-hmm. used the character, the main character, mm-hmm. to tell our story, the story mm-hmm. of a people. We witnessed many, many significant things over a 50-year period, and mm-hmm. I tell that the real story of those events. For example, I started in 1951 because everyone believes, and we have been taught, that Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. Well, the truth of the matter, he did not. What happened in that event, and I chose to begin there, is that he was allowed to play a game with white people because of the mm-hmm. separate but equal laws, the Jim Crow laws. And that is mm-hmm. basically what happened. But history, his story, H-I-S story, has mm-hmm. a way of sanitizing the truth or the reality mm-hmm. of truth. And history will reflect, and it is so well documented, that Mr. Robinson, and I'm not taking anything away from his great achievement, but he was not the best player in the Negro League. He was an average player, and when he came over to begin playing for the so-called American League, he was the most valuable player a few years ago, so that means he was better than all of the rest of the white players. Now, mm-hmm. he was in no way to the level of Satchel Paige or Josh Gibson or any of those guys. So mm-hmm. as I go through the story, there's Brown versus the Board of Education, which people believe that when the Supreme Court said, with all deliberate speed, you know, we suddenly became integrated in 1954. The truth of the matter is there were three separate Supreme Court cases before it was finally resolved, and it took 13 years before integration began. So history, we have been lied to through the prism mm-hmm. of other people's eyes, and we have bought it hook, line, and sinker. Mm-hmm. So Malcolm said, we've been hoodwinked oftentimes. So mm-hmm. in Just a Season, I go through a 50-year period, and I chronicle significant moments in time and clarify them, if you will. And to date, no one has been able to dispute my assessment mm-hmm. of these events.
Mm-hmm. Because some of the things you mentioned is still going on in today's society. So I want to piggyback on Jackie Robinson. You have said that he was not the best player, and you name others that you thought in your research and views were better than he is. Why do you think that history has used him on that pinnacle, then, if you may, and none of the others have been mentioned? Why is this so? Was it because of his connections, relationships? Why is it?
No, what I did was put you in the moment. Back in 1951, it was a very segregated society. The Negro Leagues, when they came to play in any town, for example, New York, they rented the Brooklyn Dodgers ballpark, mm-hmm. or the Yankee Stadium or Griffin Stadium, wherever it was, and they rented it from the white owners. Now, when the Negro League teams played, there was an overflow crowd. When the mm-hmm. white players played, there were few people there. So they saw an opportunity to make money. And mm-hmm. they knew that Mr. Robinson was making $100 a month, and if they paid him $1,000 a month and they were able to bring him in and be accepted, and you can be accepted mm-hmm. if your team wins, then the others in the Negro League, the great players, would follow. And that's what happened. And guess mm-hmm. what? There is no Negro League around anymore, is it?
Anymore, because it has been sold out.
It is all about economics. So if you follow the money, you will get the answer.
That's right.
Branch
That's
Rickey,
right.
the person, the owner of the Brooklyn Dodgers, had no interest in doing anything for our cause. He saw a business opportunity, and thankfully that occurred. But this event is recorded as a monumental achievement in history, but the truth of the matter is other sports, football, for example, had integrated or had black players. There were other sports, but there has to be something that could be communicated in order of marketing, if you will, in order for it to work. So as Muhammad Ali once said, you know, my mouth gets me in trouble with some, others love it. So either you love me or you hate me, but either way, you're going to pay for the ticket.
That's right. Either way. You know, I don't understand baseball or football or any of those things. However, I know enough to know that there is enough money in the black community that could own a black league. Why is there no black league anymore? Why do you think there is none?
I think you said it. We sold out. One of the things that happens, there was a gentleman who wrote a book several years ago, and he called athletes and major sports figures million-dollar slaves. The American dollar is very... I told you, I write a blog called Thought Provoking Perspectives.
Oh,
and,
that's good stuff.
Yeah, and I throw it out there because Jack Nicholson said something like, you can't handle the truth, and most of us are afraid of it. And
that's right.
The fact of the matter, when we sat in school for those 12 years and beyond, we were told all kinds of nonsense, like George Washington chopped down the cherry tree, or Abraham Lincoln never told a lie. I wrote a blog just before Christmas speaking to the Emancipation Proclamation Act. Most people believe that he actually signed that to free the slaves. Truth of the matter is he signed that to free the slaves in the Confederacy, not in the North where he controlled. So he never freed anyone. He never freed anyone.
God.
And if you look closer at history, he had members of his cabinet to try to locate other places where he could remove the Negro from America and plant them. He sent many to Haiti as an experiment, and most of them died due to disease. So, you know, history is skewed. And you have to look at it very carefully to understand why we are where we are today.
I know one of the great teachers of time on the African American history is Dr. John Henry Clark. He is a powerful, powerful teacher, and there is so much out there to be known if we will make ourselves accessible to it. And I think I might not be accurate in saying so. I think there's one aspect of it that our people hold on to us to say that, oh, white people hate us and white people is this and white people is that. However, they do not search to find the information in order to have a constructive dialogue about the ifs and whys and position ourselves to change what is taking place now. Because of the same fact, you went back and your son was taken away from you way too early. And as I listened to you relate that story, I got affirmation on how important it is for us to enjoy right now. Right now is the rest of our lives, right this minute here, because we do not know whether we are going to be seeing 8 o'clock tonight, tomorrow morning. So the conversation and the part of the legacy that you and I are creating now, if this happens to be our last dialogue and we decide to go home, that should be a powerful part of the legacy we create together. Instead of being a conversation around hate and envy and jealousy and all of that stuff. I know it is never too late to start over. You know, if you could wave your magic wand, where would you like to see us as a people start over to create a better legacy for us?
Well, first you have to look at it this way. It wasn't until around 1917 or 18 when Carter G. Woodson realized that there was no history written as it relates to us. And if you go back in the 18, after the Civil War up until the 1900s, most African Americans, black people, did not even have a birth certificate. There may be mm-hmm. some journal entry written where you were purchased by somebody who gave you their name, but if mm-hmm. they didn't give you a birth certificate, how in the world could anyone expect them to write any of the positive achievements that we did? So wow. What he did was to champion Negro History Week, and it evolved into Black History Month, and he and a few of the other black scholars began to put these writings and disseminate this or spread this information about our past, and then it became into the mainstream. If I were to go back to a point and try to change things, I would probably select 3 or 4 periods and would hope that people would grasp the concept that W.E.B. Du Bois set forth for us, our course, Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King, those periods and the messages mm-hmm. that they were communicating to us would have mm-hmm. certainly, if followed, changed the course of our existence. And mm-hmm. Marcus mm-hmm. Garvey was one who fought and preached self-reliance, and mm-hmm. they villainized mm-hmm. him for that. Now, I want to go back to something you said just before you asked that question. And you said, right now is all we have. When I give a speech or speak publicly, I always close with this. You only have a minute. You didn't choose it, can't refuse it. It's up to you to use it. It's a tiny little minute, but it's an eternity in it. So you don't have a past. There is no future. You have the present.
The present. It's a gift, and so many of us don't even open it.
Exactly.
You know?
We're on the same
page. So many of us don't even open it. It's so wrapped, and it's so beautiful, and it's there with the bow, and we exit, and people come and look at it, and, oh, my God, it's so nicely wrapped. I don't want to open it. I don't want to open it. You know, it's It's interesting, and there is so much work to be done. And I listened to what your reply was to that question, and it just sounded so loudly the importance for conversation. People need to turn the televisions off, the radio, all the gadgets. I'm all for improvement and change and all the tablets and all the stuff. But we need to put them down and we need to begin to talk with each other. Parents need to be talking with the children. Parents and children need to be talking with the grandparents. Because that is how we are going to be able to capture the truth. Because a lot about our history is nowhere documented to be found. So if we are looking to add to that, we need to be having conversation with our elders. You know, like when people in Africa, I'm told, I've never been there, but people in Africa, the elders play an important role in what is happening. And I want us to go to, because I know that you are someone who is very committed to the diaspora of the African American community. So I want for you, if there's something else you would like to finish off on a book, just a season, I want us to now transition in your commitment to the African diaspora.
Well, you can contribute, and each of us can contribute. You don't have to be a great person to make a contribution. It all starts at home and understanding mm-hmm. that the system is designed to protect the system, and we were never included and part of the system. So mm-hmm. if we allow the schools to raise our children, they end up in the penitentiary. And mm-hmm. if we as deliverers of life, meaning parents, endure the journey singularly, meaning a one-person family, and I'm not disparaging anyone who is a single parent, but if, for example, you have a boy, a mm-hmm. child, mm-hmm. and you are a woman trying to raise that child, you can keep him alive, but you cannot make him a man.
That's exactly.
And the mm-hmm. system has done a masterful job in taking our fathers and incarcerating them or creating mm-hmm. the ilk in our communities that mm-hmm. caused mm-hmm. them to be incarcerated. And mm-hmm. No one can say that it is by their own design that they're incarcerated, because when you compare the statistics, we outnumber everybody else that's in any prison system. Mm-hmm. And we're mm-hmm. only 12% of the population. So that indicates that there's something wrong. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. We can go back into history with the great Republican hero, mm-hmm. Ronald Reagan. It is documented through his administration's illegal activities that various forms of narcotics were implanted into the urban areas, and that mm-hmm. was by design. And out of that came the Rockefeller Act and the three strikes laws and all of these things. And mm-hmm. More significantly, I talk about this in the book also. Mm-hmm. When you mm-hmm. go back to the 1950s, Daniel Patrick Moynihan wrote a report for Congress called the Moynihan Report. And in it, out of that report, he spoke of how to solve the Negro's problem. And what came out of it was the welfare system, the system of dependency. And if you were to receive government benefits, the man could not be present in the home. So that, mm-hmm, in effect... Mm-hmm. Destroyed mm-hmm. the black family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, there's two things I want to speak about. The father that in the home, I'm going to talk about that. But I want to go back to where you mentioned about mothers raising sons. You're speaking to one of those women. I am a single parent of a male boy. And 1 year, my son gave me a Father's Day card that he made at school. He gave me a Father's Day card. He also gave me a Mother's Day card. When he gave me the Father's Day card, I took it, read it, the tears rolled out my eyes, and I went in my room. I closed the door because I honestly did not know how to deal with it. But as I thought it through, I realized that I was trying to do exactly what you just spoke about. I was trying to make him into a man, and I had experience on how to do that. So after that awakening, which turned out to be an aha moment, immediately after that was when I got him a male mentor, because I realized the importance of a male in their lives. The other thing you mentioned about the male not in the in the home, I worked years ago for one of the government agencies in Connecticut. And I was the empowerment person for the agency. And I would go in there because I'm there to empower and train them. They would give me a lot of inside stories, which other people who work with the same agencies could not get from them because their line of work was different from what I was doing. So they were not ashamed to tell me how much money they're earning and how much money is under their mattress, because if they put it in the bank, it's going to reflect on their bank statement and they wouldn't be able to get the funding for the housing. And they don't hide to let me know that the man or the baby father is living there with them. However, when the inspectors are coming to inspect the apartment, that man cannot be anywhere there because they live alone. And talk to them, and I said, but why is it? Oh no, but if we do or let them know, then we are not going to get this and we are not going to get that and we are not going to get the other. So there is so much that people still hold on to, and it's not that they cannot do better. It's that they are stuck, and they don't want to do better and to move on. So everything that you have said has been on the mark. And again, I just thank you for coming on and for us to be having this very, I would consider it a thought-provoking conversation. So before you reply, I want to remind people that the chat room is open. You know, you can call in. The number is 646-915-8166. And my honored guest is Mr. John T. Wells. And I know you're hanging out there listening on your computers, because I see it every time I click off and go in the archives. So I want you to call in and ask a question, have something to say in this conversation. And those of you who are listening online, I want you to tweet your friends or Facebook them and let them know we need to have them as part of this conversation. Back to you, Mr. Wells. Okay, so let us go into the transition into the African diaspora. Why did you see it fit to be so committed to that, and why do you think it is essential for us as Black people to be involved?
Well, if you look at this moment, we have the most important symbol for success than we've ever had before. The President of the United States of America is truly an African American. His father was African and his mother was American. That black face glass and shattering that glass ceiling should be encouragement for most, if not all, people of color or minorities to believe that you can succeed. Prior to 2008, we were taught or told you can be anything you want, when in the back of most African Americans' minds was we knew that we could only reach a certain level. And even today, when you look around and if there's a movie that's going to be made, you want to see the same 10 actors starring. If you listen to the radio, you're going to hear the same few stars' music most of the time in the rotation. There are few authors. So my point is there are only a small number of people to succeed at a significant level, if you would. If you were to take your hand and count on your fingers, I'm sure most of us would come up with the same people. It would be Oprah, it would be Michael Jordan, it would be, you know, Beyonce, Jay-Z. I mean, you see what my point?
So I
have an argument, or I have came to the conclusion that we rely too much on the quote-unquote so-called leaders. You are the leader. See, because when you have a leader out there that the news media, and we know who controls news people, news media, has put them up front, then they're being paid by that media to communicate the message they want us to hear.
So
we haven't truly, in my opinion, had a leader since Martin Luther King or Malcolm.
Yeah, because, you know, the people keep switching. It's like they stand in the middle and their legs are spread apart. One leg is to the right and one is to the left. If the need arise for them to bend forward or bend backward or go left or go right, that's what they're going to do. But no one is willing to take a stand to say, this is what I believe. We look on black people. We look on black businesses. We look for black support. We look on why isn't black history being taught in our schools. For the black children to know about their history, their parents has to invest in a private tutor for them. And thanks to some writers who are now writing black history books, I honor them. And black investment in black people. So I list all of those things again, and I go back to when I asked about the league and with all the money. Now, with all the money we have in the black community, why aren't we looking at better commitment when we look on the black people supporting the black businesses? Why aren't we supporting each other? I mentioned.
As we go into Black History Month, and I'd like for the audience to know that I'm speaking from that perspective, and hopefully this will be something that will produce thought. Now, I made my grandfather the star, one of the stars in my novel this season, and I can recall him saying to me once, and it still holds true today. He said it's our people. He called them Negroes, are like the man who is bent over. And someone, the leader, taps them on the shoulder and say, you can stand up now. And the man who's bent over looked at the person and said, I thought I was standing up.
That is deep. That
so,
is deep.
That is how it was. And I would like to, I pose this thought from time to time. and I wrote a blog about it. I am a little uncomfortable about hearing all of the talk about, well, what can we do? How should we do it? We're smart enough to be able to do it. It takes unity. Now, I have a simple mathematical equation, and I'm not a genius by no means, but I am a person who has common sense. The Census Bureau says that there is somewhere around 42 million African Americans in this country. I would propose each one donate $1 a week to a fund, and over 52 weeks plus interest. Now, that's $40 million a week, excluding the so-called rich people, because there are no rich African Americans. I mean, no wealthy African Americans. They're only rich ones, because the difference in being wealthy and rich, Shaq, for example, would be rich, but the guy who pays him the $100 million to play basketball is wealthy. So there is a difference. It is a distinction.
That's right.
But if you multiply 42 million times 52, that's a significant amount of money. And then you take into consideration that we spend, as consumers, $1 trillion a year. There is absolutely no excuse why we should have to patronize the other people who move into our community and set up shop on every corner.
I think we still, we look and we say our cultures hate us and they prejudice against us and all of that and yada, 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 yada. I think one of the strongest prejudices is us among ourselves. Because I think why there is not more money circulating in the black community is that we don't trust each other. We don't love each other. You know, we look and we think, oh, well, the black person is not going to give me equality. So I run down somewhere to hire somebody else who is having a different, you know, ethnicity and all of that. And I'm not against people doing that, but I'm saying support your own. Because you notice how those other people are set up. They ain't doing no business with us. They're supporting their own.
Thank you. Every other culture does that. I would be looked at as insane if I went to Chinatown and tried to open up a rib shop.
Ain't nobody buying it unless when we come down there to shop, we would probably buy some ribs. And I ain't even buying no ribs because I'm vegan now. So don't open it on my account.
But you know, there are Oriental food places on every corner in our communities. And if it's not that, it is a liquor store. And if it is not that, it is a church. And if it's not that, you know, so going back to the Willie Lynch theory, there has been a system of divide and conquer. And I won't say we so much hate ourselves. I would put it this way. The psychological lingering of slavery and the effects of separate but equal and discrimination and segregation. Mm-hmm. See, we clearly understand. Today on Meet the Press, General Powell made a statement, and he was pointing out some of the dog whistles that he hears from the Republican Party. Well, it appears to others that, you know, we're reaching for straws, but if you're an African American, you clearly understand what it means when you're called lazy. You know what I mean? I mean, you know what is being said. So there's coded language. And when our school systems have failed, right? Because, for example, in a city like Baltimore, only 50% of the people, well, I'm sorry, 70%, less than half of the people, let me correct that, at 70% of the people who enter high school do not complete it. In most urban areas, or we go to Chicago when there is 5, 6, 10 people killed in a weekend or more, I mean, these kinds of things are the result of the situation and condition we're placed in, both mentally and financially.
Yeah, because,
so
you know.
What I said in that earlier statement about the 40 million times 52, I posed that question at a place I spoke last year, and someone asked me a question later and said, well, who's going to manage it? And I looked at the lady and said, we have a black man that's the president of the United States. Do you mean to tell me that there is nobody that is capable of managing that money where we can come to our own sources to get home loans, for educational loans, and to improve our community? I mean, you know, so some of the things that, and besides, you give 10% every Sunday morning in church, and you get nothing in return but a smile and a good feeling. So it is time for us to realize that we live in a capitalistic society, and with no capital, you have no society. It is that simple.
That's right. That's right. And that, you see, that answer exactly what my thoughts were, because that woman, although ye of little faith, she's thinking there's no skills and talents in the black community to manage our own banks. And shame on her. Shame on her. Because it is here, but until we begin to have the faith in the ability of our people, they are not going to be excelling. Go ahead.
Absolutely.
You were going to say something.
And no, I was going to agree with you. Absolutely. It comes down to faith, and that's when I mentioned earlier Dr. Du Bois or Marcus Garvey or Malcolm and Martin and what they were telling us we didn't hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the
mm-hmm.
things, I spoke to an elementary school, or not an elementary school, a middle school, and I asked the group of about, I don't know, maybe 75 students. I pointed different people, students, out, and I asked them to tell me something about Martin Luther King. Now, understand, these kids were 12, 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And all they could tell me about him was, one, he was assassinated, and two, he had a dream.
Wow.
You know, and then the truth is, if anyone has ever read the speech, and I heard it live and when it was given in 1963, it was not about having a dream at all. The speech was about, if America had written a bad check to us Negroes, and it's time for us to make good on that check, or America make good on that check. That's what the speech was about.
Mm-hmm.
And history has cut out less than a paragraph.
Yes, you know? the relevant part of it. As usual, they feed you, the media and the people who are capturing history, you know, those who are putting it in the archive, they feed us what they think they need to give us, because they know that we have been settling for such a long time, and nobody wants to rock the boat. Nobody wants to ruffle the feathers. So if you just give them enough, they're not going to ask for any more. You know, they're not going to challenge it. So you just give it to them. So thanks to people like yourself and others who are making waves in this time, you know, in the present, you are making waves so that when you are gone home, it's for the others to be empowered enough to carry on what you have started. Again, I want people to know, I want to welcome guests 6726 to the chat. Be part of the conversation. You can do so by calling 646-915-8166. I'm going to go back to Mr. Wills, but I want to remind you, for those of you who are living in the Litchfield County area, and also New Milford, Danbury, Brookfield, Bethel, Waterbury, Bethlehem, Watertown, Southbury, Middlebury, Torrington, Goshen, Terryville, Thomaston, Bonsam, and all surrounding towns in the greater Litchfield area, I am inviting you to come out to our meeting on this Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. at the Elegant Litchfield Inn at 432 Bantam Road. I am the new president of that chapter, and I'm looking to get your involvement. We are having these back-to-back meetings in January because we are looking to launch our chapter officially in February. So come on out, guys. You know, the Litchfieldian is right there on 202. I am looking for your support. Also, if you have not yet been following me on Twitter, please check me out at Twitter at Dynamic Daphne. Facebook, you can like my fan page, facebook.com/Dynamic Daphne. Visit my website at DaphneClarkHudsonEmpowers.com. You can get some free ebooks there. You can get free DVDs there. And I want to encourage you to sign up for my mailing list because I got some great things that's coming down the pike and you don't want to miss out. The people who are on my mailing list, they are going to be informed first. So, again, I have my honored guest, Mr. John T. Wills, and he is such a historian, and he's just rolling here tonight. So I'm excited about this conversation. So we want you to be part of it too. So call in 646-915-8166. Mr. Wills, is there anything on your mine or on your notes or on your list that you were hoping I would have asked you that I have not asked you yet? We are down to 28 minutes. If so, I want you to throw that in the mix now before I come up with my other stuff.
Well, we have captured, the conversation has flowed well. I am a public speaker, among many other things, and with Black History Month coming, if anyone would be interested in me being a speaker, I love speaking to the youth of America, particularly young men. You can send me an email to johntwills@ymail.com. And I write an empowering blog, Thought-Provoking Perspectives. You can go to my Facebook page, John T. Wills. My website is johntwills.com, and you can find everything from my website and all the things that I do.
All right. I want us to go now to your second book. You want to talk about what that one is and what it is about?
Yes.
I like to hear when you laugh.
One of the significant things. I never expected just the season to have the success that it, or to receive the adulation that it received, and I'm honored and thank everyone for their support. I had a reviewer to say that just the season is a contemporary roots, and another said the book has the emotion of The Color Purple, and that's pretty good company to be in.
Oh,
now,
yes. Wow.
The way I leave you at the end of the story, once the character has reexamined his life and come back to the moment, he leaves the cemetery and walks into the abyss of time. And I have a cliffhanger that wasn't intended, but it was perfect, and it leaves you wanting for more. I waited several years, and I, you know, did a lot of other things, and I wanted to continue the book. But when the book received that kind of praise, I knew that the sequel or the continuation of the story would not rise to that level. So I had to find a way to make it at least possible. So the character, the main character, had a son, and that son died, and that was the cemetery, the tombstone he was viewing. That his son, the character's son, had a child in which he died on his first birthday. Now, 8 years has passed, and the main character is with that child, who is his grandson. And they're together when Barack Obama was elected president of the United States. The child saw his grandfather cry for the first time, and as they were watching TV, and he saw all the emotion of the people crying, and, you know, all of, you know, as if, you know, this was the second coming or something. He asked his grandfather, "What's wrong? Why are you crying? You should be happy." And he had no idea about from which we came. And the grandfather, in the oral African tradition, sits him down and takes him on the most amazing journey from Africa to that moment when America, these United States, elected a black man as president. And it is quite a journey through the passage of time. And I will tell you, our story is the greatest story ever told. There are people who speak of their adversity, and I don't dare say that they did not. You know, we could say the American Indian or the people who experienced the Holocaust and those kinds of things. Yes, they were horrible and horrific. But I don't think anyone's struggle, continued struggle, matches ours, except maybe the indigenous Indians of this hemisphere. We were captured and dragged to ships under force of arms. We were put in the belly of the beast, and half never arrived to the shores. We were dragged onto the shores and sold, and our families were dispersed and sold all over the place, and raped and murdered and hung and lynched. And today we can look at people saluting a black man who's the most powerful man on the face of the earth, and that is a testament that no one can match, bar none. We're still standing. All that was done to make sure we didn't. We are still standing.
And with all of that evolution that has happened since then, and we have a black president and all of that good stuff, we are still stuck. What do you see in your humble eyes, the eyes of a man who has dedicated, committed, devoted his life to keeping the black history alive? What do you see us doing to start to move ahead? I mean, go ahead.
There are several things that is significant. I use another phrase. Education is the single most important ingredient necessary to neutralize those forces that breed poverty and despair. We must empower our minds. You know, there's a saying, free your mind and the rest will follow. And that's what needs to happen. But with respect to the president, let's not be fooled to think that he can wave a magic wand and everything will be all right. But what he can do, what he will do, he has put Eric Holder in as the Attorney General to address some of the things that caused us to be incarcerated at a greater level than others. He will have an opportunity to select two, for sure, maybe three Supreme Court justices before he leaves. And that will affect the lives of our children for generations because the Supreme Court justices are there for life. And I want to remind you of a little case that happened in 1896. It was called Plessy versus Ferguson. Homer Plessy chose to do a Rosa Parks type thing, and he went and sat in the white dining car. And his case went to the Supreme Court, and that Supreme Court said that he had no right constitutionally to sit with white people, and it ushered in separate but equal sanctioning Jim Crow by law, and it lasted for 65 years. So that is how significant the president can be. Not to mention the fact that he's bringing the troops home and he's ending the wars that the other guys started. So the point is, let's not be fooled to think that he is able to do all things.
I know, and he's not supposed to.
What he's
not supposed to do all things, because we have a responsibility. And I keep asking the question, when are we going to begin to start towards picking up the slack? We got to begin to take responsibility for those things that we can do. It's like the Christian people, they'll sit down there not doing diddly squat, and they sit down, they say they're waiting on the Lord. When the Lord already gave them the idea of what to do, they still sit down looking at that idea. They are not making a move. So yes, the president is there and he's doing his best. Yet there are a lot of people sitting with their legs and arms crossed, and they don't decide to take their responsibility to move ahead. What can we do? What if it's five or four things that we can begin to do, each of us, and hope that others will emulate us and watch what we're doing and begin to take their responsibility? What would these things be, Mr. Mills? Mr. Mills?
Well, I would think the first thing that we should have on the agenda is to become entrepreneurs and establish our own businesses, because it's a fact that small businesses hire a tremendous portion of the population, and if we owned more businesses, we could hire more of each other or support each mm-hmm. other. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we need to support those businesses. And thirdly, we need to become better educated. See, I tried to go back in time to see when the moment occurred when a drastic change took place in our modern history. Mm-hmm. During segregation, a dollar would be passed around the community for weeks before it mm-hmm. would leave. Today, mm-hmm. when you get your paycheck, that dollar leaves in 15 minutes.
Oh, sometimes we don't even get there. Yep.
So, mm-hmm. you know, we need to design a way or plan to a process where we can keep more of the money that we spend as consumers within our communities, as other cultures. So when I began to look and see what changed, we were the envy of all other cultures as far as staying together and low divorce rates and all of the things mm-hmm. that happened within our families. We went through the late 1960s and the early 70s, the late 1960s, and we were a close-knit unit. We were Black Power, let's you know, unite, let's mm-hmm. come together. In the mm-hmm. 70s, we made some strides. We began to get government jobs. We began to get some semblance of equality. And then Ronald Reagan was elected. And then mm-hmm. with the crack epidemic and with all of the things that took place during those 8 years, people who were dependent on the street pharmaceuticals allowed or were in a situation where their babies raised themselves, if not being crack babies. And if you do the math, the young people that we're seeing now are products of that period, the 80s.
That's right. That's right. Because you see three generations out, and you really don't know who's the mother, who's the grandmother, and who's the child. You know, guys, just a couple of years between them, you know?
It's a very good point that you bring up. Mm-hmm. In my youth, the elder women, grandmas of the communities, we called Big Mama. She would be 50, 60 years old, and she had all this mm-hmm. wisdom, and she would teach and her grandchildren and young ladies in particular how to be ladies, mm-hmm. women. Today,
how to be mothers.
Yes. Today, grandma is 30. And she's doing the same thing that the children
are doing. And 25, so they dress the same way, they look the same way, they act the same way. And, you know, I don't want people to listen and think we are being judgmental, but it's a wake-up call and a lesson to be learned that there is work to be done in the community, and it takes each and every one of us. to begin to make a difference. We are down to 15 minutes remain, and I want to just thank you. They said time flies when you're having fun, and to me, I don't know if you had fun. This was it was great. I enjoy every minute of it. I want to just ask you to just take this time to summarize your thought. There were so many high points that were brought out. But if you would bullet some to give to the listeners that they can look at it and say, here is what I do, bam, bam, bam. What would this look like?
Well, the first thing I would suggest that it is time to get angry. I mean, I'm not saying or trying to suggest violence, to suggest violence, but we have to say enough is enough.
Is enough. Enough is enough. I'm not settling no more.
Right. And I say that because last week I read an article. The movie Django, I don't know if you saw it.
No, you don't want to know the last time I saw a movie. I'm not going to embarrass myself.
Well, anyway, this is supposed to be some type of a reflection or rendition of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And slavery is a very sensitive issue, and it was a horrible stain on our lives and consciousness. Do you know that the people who produced the movie, made the movie, that anyway, they have dolls they're selling of the slave characters and the slave masters. And one person tweeted he wanted to buy a slave doll so his child could know what it felt like to own a slave.
Oh,
see,
my
very
God.
Dangerous.
Wow.
Of the language that's being communicated. Now, if a Jewish, this had been, I don't know, what is it, Schindler's List or something, about a Jewish culture, and someone was going to put out dolls, they wouldn't stand for that, not one second.
No.
So,
shameful.
Yes,
2013 and still. It's still here, prevalent, you know?
So it is time for us to take a stand and or stand up to responsibility, if for no other reason than your children.
That's right.
I don't
want them to do this. And use today wisely. Use this the present wisely, because as we say before at the top of the hour, this is all you have. So use it wisely to create in that child what you want the end result to be.
Exactly. And I would that would be my highest bullet point, to accept responsibility, because regardless of who you are, if you have melanin in your skin, and it is that of an African-American, when you put on your sweats and flip your hat around backwards, you're subjected to the same type of degrading or incidents that could occur as anyone else, the guy standing on the corner. There have been some very tragic situations that every parent, and I can speak for people of this fraternity that's lost a child, there was Trayvon Martin, and then there was another gentleman, a young man down in Jacksonville, Florida, who were killed for nothing. For nothing. So when I was a child, there was Emmett Hill, and there have been countless. Ladies and gentlemen, these are your children at risk.
That's right. And we have
you
to stand up.
You do not want to have the feeling of that loss. So talk to them. And remember that a boy needs to see a man to be a man, and a girl needs
to
see a man in order to choose a man.
The right man. Wow. That is powerful. I do hope that you and I get to go into conversation again. And I'm going to be very selfish in saying that I enjoy it. And I don't know what your assessment is, but it was an honor for me. I want for you to please take this time to once again give out your contact information and let people know when you're on the air, because you also have a radio show. Let them know where to find your blog and everything. And again, I want to thank you on behalf of the listeners here on the A New Day platform for investing your time and knowledge to us.
Well, it has been my pleasure, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to speak to your audience. I can be found on Facebook, Twitter, all of those social media sites. You can go to johntwills.com, and from there you can find links to all of those social media venues. I host the John T. Wills Booktree radio show, where we pride ourselves on promoting literacy. We have an author each week, and we promote authors, people who are passionate about the written word. And I write a powerful blog, Thought-Provoking Perspectives. And starting February 1, I will have a different historical perspective on the African-American diaspora for the whole 28 days. And you can find information to all of that at johntwills.com.
All right. Well, I tell you, for those of you who did not call in, shame, shame, shame on you, but I still love you guys. I want to encourage you to share the link to this conversation. You know, put it up on your, wherever you want to put it, to make sure that it is listened to. And for those of you who join us by listening in the chat room or on the internet, I honor you and I thank you. And again, if you are out there and you encounter any stories that you think would be a match in my show, refer them to me. Let me have that pre-show dialogue and to see whether or not their story or their experience is a value added to the listeners. Again, we are here on Wednesdays, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, and on Sundays, 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. I am your host, Dynamic Daphne. I'm excited about what I do. I am passionate about it. I want you to visit my website, DaphneClarkHudsonEmpowers.com. I want you to support me by picking up copies of my books and just give them away as gifts, you know. Invest in people. We live in a world where not too many people are reading anymore. So you want to invest in others and help them to acquire the wealth of knowledge and information that they want. Again, I look forward for your support on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. I am on, the only thing I'm not on yet is Instagram. I have to go figure out what that one is about and how to do that one. But I'm all over the place. Check me out. Again, I'm going to be writing a blog, not a blog, a column, personal development empowerment column for an online magazine and online newspaper. And I will give you next week, I will give you more information. I already know it's going to be on a Wednesday. And I will give you information on where you can find that. So my honored guest is still on the line. And since we have 5 minutes, I want to ask him if he has any closing thoughts that came to his mind since he last spoke, sir.
Well, I am a person who comes out of a time that I would like to see return. I think one of the greatest albums, and that's what they were called then, was by Marvin Gaye, What's Going On?
Woo! Love me some Marvin now. Hey!
If you have not had the opportunity lately to listen to it, maybe you should listen to the soundtracks of that album and it would enhance your consciousness, because in 1970, when that was recorded, it could be released today, and it's certainly speaks to the same situation that we're currently in.
Yeah. Woo! If you have it on your thing, you better send it to me so I can upload it on my radio show, because if I had it now, I would be just clicking it on. It's, oh,
well, he
that
talks
was
about
bad,
many
bad
things.
Yep.
Mercy, mercy me, save the children, the ecology. We need to look inside our souls and be a benefit to others. I will leave you with what I always do and like to do. You only have a minute. You didn't choose it, can't refuse it. It's up to you to use it. It's just a tiny little minute, but there's an eternity in it. Daphne, thank you for having me, and it's been my pleasure.
It's an honor. And with that being said, know that you have a destiny, and I want you to step up to the plate so you can connect with your destiny.
Thank you.
What's the place that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart?
The breaking of day. It's definitely. praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Begin to thank Him. Begin to praise Him. Hallelujah. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Everybody, you're going into a new dimension tonight. You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and praise your God.